Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello, and welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft. We come to you every Tuesday evening to bring you the latest and most in-depth golf coverage. Normally, our co-host Carlos Torres welcomes you to the show, but he's traveling this week and unable to be live and in color. Not to worry, though. He's still at the controls, and he has control and mute button, so he can shut me off if he wants to. But filling in for Carlos this evening is my friend and longtime PGA golf professional, Mark Croft from Yuma, Arizona. Welcome to the Back 9 Report, Mark.
Hey, thanks, Fred. It's a pleasure to be on, pleasure to be with you. I'm looking forward to doing the show with you today.
What's things like in Yuma, Arizona today, Mark?
Today it was 95 degrees, so most folks would say it was hot. For us folks who live here year-round, it was just a nice spring day.
Did you get to spend some time on the practice tee today?
No.
I'm
still about 3 to 4 weeks away from the practice tee.
Okay, all right. Hey, Mark, I don't know about you, but I've been suffering from a little bit of a postpartum Masters funk. But there were tournaments around the world of golf last weekend, so let's get right to it and talk about the current newsworthy happenings in the golf world. They played a PGA Tour event on Hilton Head Island last week. Luke Donald made his first attempt at finding the winner's circle since 2013, but came up just a little short at the RBC Heritage on Sunday. He took a one-shot lead into the final round, but South African Brendan Grace posted a final round 66 to slip by Donald and Russell Knox. Since 2010, Grace has 7 European Tour and 5 Sunshine Tour wins, but this was his first win on the PGA Tour. Playing in his first PGA Tour event as a professional, Bryson DeChambeau picked up a nice check of $259,000 as he tied for fourth with Kevin Na. Looks like Cobra Puma's investment as one of the rookie's main sponsors is paying off nicely already. I'm sure that fourth-place check is chump change compared to the check he received from Cobra Puma last week. By the way, Steve Eubanks has an excellent article about DeChambeau and his performance at Hilton Head in this week's Global Golf Post. On another note, Ernie Els rebounded nicely from his Masters debacle. He finished T14 by firing a final round 6-under par 66 on Sunday. That probably made him reconsider his retirement statements he made after that ugly putting exhibition at Augusta National last week. Mark, I know you're busy over the weekend, but did you get to watch any of the RBC Heritage? And do you have any thoughts or storylines that impressed you?
No, I didn't. I had a huge event on Saturday that ran from 8 o'clock in the morning to almost 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And then on Sunday, I was teaching all day. So I didn't really get to watch any golf except for the little bit that I was in the clubhouse and they had it on the television and the little bit I was able to catch up with. But I'm kind of like you. I'm in a little bit of a funk after the Masters. It was a great event, and it's not that I'm not excited about golf, but just really, really busy over the weekend, and the RBC really didn't, get me all that excited.
Yeah, it has a way of doing that. It's a nice event. Hilton Head's a great place. It's a short course, gives the short hitters a place to that they have a chance to win, but yeah, I just couldn't get excited. I know the Masters was kind of a letdown. Hey, Mark, there was a couple of other tournaments this weekend. The Champions Tour, Woody Austin captured his second Champions Tour title of the year last weekend just outside of Atlanta at the Mitsubishi Electric Championship. He posted a final round 64, won in a playoff over West Shore Jr. Aquaman is now number 2 on the Champions Tour money list and in the Charles Schwab Cup points race. On the European Tour, they were in Spain for the Open de España at Valderrama. Andrew Johnson captured his maiden European Tour title as he held off the challenge of Dutchman Hoist Luton to win the Rio Club Valderrama Open de España. And hosted by Carlos's guy, Sergio Garcia. The Englishman came into the final day alongside Lloyd at 2-under and signed for a 1-under par 70 to take the title by one shot, become the first player to win a European Tour event with an over-par score since Justin Rose won the U.S. Open at Marin in 2013. I had to put this in here because his nickname, this Andrew Johnson's guy's nickname, is Beef, okay? B-E-E-F, Beef. And his first comments to the media after his win were, "I'm going to get hammered." You got to love a guy like that. Hey, also, the women were in Hawaii. Minjee Lee carded an eagle and four birdies on the back nine to earn her second career LPGA Tour victory at the Lotte Championship. Minjee began the final round five shots behind the 54-hole leader, Katie Burnett, and fired a tidy 34-30, 8-under par 64. You ever carded a 64, Mark?
Yes, I have, as a matter of fact.
Do it on what? You did it on a putt-putt or what? I did it once,
no.
But that was when we got rained out after 13 holes.
No, I actually right here on my home course that I live on, about 8 years ago, I had a red-hot putter, and I was playing in a good-sized skins game with a bunch of guys and shot 64 on a par 72.
Yeah, it's a nice score. I'm getting strokes from you, buddy. Lydia Ko was a non-factor this week and finished at T23. She will be the defending champion in San Francisco this week for the Swinging Skirts Championship. Minjee, still a teenager from Australia, said to the media after the win, "Well, yesterday I spoke to my coach, and he was like, 'You're only five back. Just shoot 8-under, and you'll be fine.' And I shot 8-under, and that was good." Lee started a strong with a birdie on the first and didn't look back, telling five more birdies and an eagle en route to her 8-under par. Biggest story of the week, though, may have been the play of LPGA Tour veteran Katie Burnett. While Burnett didn't take home the trophy at the Lotte Championship, she was still pleased with how she played, sleeping on the 54-hole lead for the first time in her career. She said, "I don't necessarily feel like I lost the tournament. I feel like Minjee just won it. 8-under, I mean, that's pretty solid." Playing in the final pairing was a first for Burnett. She fired a 270 to earn the runner-up by the best performance of her LPGA career. So she's happy with the way she's going, even though she didn't win. You know, and Mark, so many times we see it, this may really light a fire in her, give her the confidence. So many times it's about the process in golf of building the confidence that you can perform in the bright lights and under the pressure with the big boys. Maybe this might get her going. What do you think?
Are you referring to Burnett?
Yes, Katie Burnett, yes. I think
she's been around four years,
and this is by far her best finish.
Right, I think she came on the tour in 2012, and this is by far her best finish. All those girls out there right now playing Fred are so good. And, of course, we do have the Korean contingency that seems to dominate on the LPGA Tour. But, I mean, come on. I'm going to go out and I'm going to shoot 8-under tomorrow. I mean, really. And a coach with a flippant comment, "All you got to do is shoot 8-under, everything will be okay." I mean, she played a fantastic round of golf. But for Burnett, no, she's close to tasting it. And I think that it bodes well for her future. I really do.
Yeah, I got to agree. Someone that we have been watching quite a bit here at the Back Nine Report, Brooke Henderson, posted another top 10. It's her seventh consecutive top 10 finish on the LPGA Tour. The majors are coming, and I just wouldn't be surprised to see her win a major. What do you think?
Well, everybody out of the chute thought she was going to be another Lydia Ko, and I don't know if you can put her in that category, but she has got a tremendous amount of talent and a tremendous amount of game. And like you said, she's just hanging in that top 10, and her time is coming. It's just when.
Well, that wraps up the Par 5 news for tonight. Carlos, let's take us into our first break, and when we come back, I'm sorry, that wraps up the backspin, pardon me. See, I'm kind of a rookie at this, guys. You got to bear with me a little bit. So that wraps up the backspin. When we come back, we're going to jump right into the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network.
for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and we're going to jump into the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network. And for the first story tonight, on the first tee, Bradley Klein from Golf Week put an article in last week with the purchase of adjoining property at Augusta National. Prognosticators have been focusing on the possibility of changes to the hallowed grounds there at Augusta National. The course has been kind of a fluid entity over the years, and the membership is constantly fiddling with ways to maintain the course's historic identity, but continually increases the difficulty for the players to stay abreast of technology and the more physically adept golfers as time goes along. The membership at Augusta recently purchased some adjoining land for an estimated $26 million, which will allow a myriad of changes to the iconic course, first envisioned by Bobby Jones and designed by Dr. Alistair McKenzie. The latest hubbub surrounds the lengthening of the 13th tee, but Klein also says the new land purchase will allow additional changes to three other holes, numbers 5, 3, and 4. The tee could be extended by 30 to 40 yards on number 5. That means the third green would be moved back 50 yards, and the par 3 fourth hole moved to the right, shifting the fifth hole back and to the right. There hasn't been an entirely new hole built since 1950, when the present 11th hole was created. The course has been lengthened by 460 yards since 2001. There's no telling what's in store next, but the land deals that have and will expand the site make a lot of the unimaginable possible, Mark. What do you think about changes to Augusta National? You four changes, you like it the way it is. What do you think about that?
Well, I like it the way it is. I really do. Whether we have a year where, we had a year this year where we had a lot of wind, a little bit of rain, but a lot of wind. Danny Willett wins it, minus 5. And then last year we had perfect weather conditions and Jordan Spieth wins it at minus 18. So if you look at that, I think you've got two kinds of golf spectators out there. You've got the spectator that really wants to see golf. They want to see a minus 2, minus 3, minus 4 finish. And then you've got the spectator out there that just wants to see all kinds of birdies and people making eagles and all kinds of interesting scoring going on. So obviously from those 2 years back to back, Augusta lends itself to being a golf course that's for every viewer's taste and satisfaction. And I think they just ought to leave it alone. In fact, to be honest with you, I think they've done too much with it already. As the trees continue to grow, the fairways continue to get tighter and tighter. I think that it's a great track the way it is, and the way that Jones envisioned it and Alistair McKenzie designed it. I really think it should be left alone. I don't think that you're really doing the viewer any favor, and I don't really think you're doing the members any favor by going out and constantly tinkering with it. I really don't.
Yeah, I can tend to agree. I can see just a little bit of tinkering, but mass changing, I just can't see it. When Tiger won it by so much in 1997, they thought, well, we've got to Tiger-proof it. And, all these other courses did that. They had length. Well, that didn't really change anything. These guys can still bomb it, and they're getting longer. But, they have one of the most beautiful pieces of property in the world. They make so much money off the tournament every year. They don't have to share it with anybody. It's all theirs. So they're doing all this fantastic stuff. It's unbelievable. But you know what? That back nine has proven year after year after year it brings the drama, it brings the suspense, it brings the excitement. Why do you want it? Why do you need to change it? It's if it's not the best tournament in the world, it's, you know, one of the top five. Why do you need to change it? It's you know, it makes it interesting. You can kind of compare, well, this is what Nicklaus used to do here, or this is what Seve used to do here. You know, it's just, I don't know why everybody feels they need to keep changing stuff when it's damn near perfect to begin with.
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. I think that even though the changes that they're considering right now are to the front nine, you know, something, leave it alone. We had Carl Jackson on our show a couple of weeks before the Masters, and, you know, the Masters' first line of defense are the greens, and you've got to put it into perfect position. If the weather's right and you don't have a lot of wind, it's easy to find those fairways and it's easy to get in position. If the weather's not right, those positions are very, very difficult to find, and it becomes a much tougher golf course. And I don't see anything wrong with a minus 18, minus 5 winner in 2 years back-to-back. I think it's great. Like I said, you got the fan out there that wants to see the birdies and the eagles and the 22-under, and you've got the fan out there that really wants to see the shot makers and the guys being able to make the shots and doing the things that they need to do to win a golf tournament. And minus 4, minus 5 is a good score. So leave it alone.
I'm with you. Hey, last Tuesday, the PGA Tour announced the captains for the 2017 President's Cup to be held at Liberty National Golf Club in New Jersey. This will be the third attempt to win a President's Cup as captain for Nick Price for the international team, and he was their team captain in both 2013 and 2015. Steve Stricker has been a member of 3 Ryder Cup teams and 5 President's Cup teams, but this will be his first attempt at captaining an international team event. He will be an assistant captain for Davis Love in the Ryder Cup this fall at Hazeltine and is very well liked by all of the players on tour. Every former Ryder Cup captain has at least one major championship win on his resume. Even though Stricker has never won a major, many feel this is a trial run for him to get a shot at a Ryder Cup captaincy in the future. Mark, can you see Steve Stricker as a Ryder Cup captain?
Yeah, I can, and there's 3 more majors left this year, so don't count Stricker out. There, you know, Steve Stricker is well-liked by all the players on the PGA Tour, and he's just a gentleman, and he's had his ups and downs on the tour, and he's a grinder. He's a worker, and he understands the game. He understands the idiosyncrasies of the game, and I think he also understands the players. And he knows what each one of those players is going through. He's a great family man. He's a phenomenal husband. He's a fantastic father. And I just think the players really, really look up to him. And you need that as a captain. I think the Davis Love carries a little bit of that as well. As a guy that a lot of the players look up to. He's paid his dues on the tour. So, I can see Stricker being a Ryder Cup captain. I can see him being a very good one, too.
Yeah, I don't know. It would surprise me if he ever got to be a Ryder Cup captain. I see him being a very successful President's Cup captain. I see him maybe even doing 2 or 3 of them. I think he's a perfect fit on a President's Cup. And a President's Cup, as you know, is a little different deal than a Ryder Cup. A lot less stress, a lot less pressure. I don't know. We seem the U.S. team always seems much more relaxed in a President's Cup deal. Even if they'd happen to lose one to an international team, everybody'd be happy that the international finally won one because they need a win. But the Ryder Cup, that's just gotten to be such a big deal. And they have had kind of a rule that, you know, you've got to have a PGA championship win or at least some kind of major win in there. It would surprise me if he's named a Ryder Cup captain, but I see him as a PGA guy, and I see him maybe doing several PGA teams.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would go for that. It'll be interesting to see how he fits into Love's plans at Hazeltine.
Yeah, does he drive the car or hold the telephone? Yeah. Hey, Mark, next subject. We're over a week away from Jordan Spieth's collapse on number 12 at the Masters, but, you know, we're still all kind of talking about it and thinking about it. It was such a large event. It seems everyone who owns a set of golf clubs and a computer has weighed in with some opinion on Spieth's fateful loss at the Masters. His caddy, Michael Greller, took to social media and posted a heartfelt and the inside account of his boss's actions on and off the course. Spieth's undoing at the Masters seemed very much out of the norm for the 22-year-old Spieth, who acts much older than his years. In Greller's comments, he talks about Spieth's sportsmanship plus his overall strong character, and that this will only be a momentary bump in the road for the young Texan. After seeing, I know it surprised you, it surprised Carlos and I, you know, what happened to Jordan on the back nine there last time at the Masters. We've seen it before with Rory. We've seen it with Greg Norman. You know, what are your conclusions? What are you thinking? What have you seen from Jordan Spieth? What do you think? Where does he go from here?
Well, I've got to agree with Geller a little bit in the fact that that I think he is going to grow from this. There's no doubt about it. I'm not sure. He made two incredibly stupid mistakes on number 12, and I'm a Spieth fan. But you know, when he hit that first ball into the water, he should have just proceeded from there, went right to the drop area, taken his medicine and moved on. He just came off the front nine making four birdies in a row. Yeah, he bogeyed 10 and 11, but, you know, to try to re-tee, to try to go up and drop in a place that's unknown, to put that bunker in, I mean, when you look at it, he just made a whole bunch of mistakes in a row. And I think that they were, what are you doing mistakes? And I don't think that Greller really was, I don't, you know, a caddy and a player season together. They're a team. And I think both of them kind of had a big mental breakdown there. And they both just kind of blew it, for lack of a better term. And, no, I think he's going to get better. I think he's going to grow from that. I think he was walking down the 13th fairway saying, what the heck did I just do there? I mean, what were you thinking? And I'm sure that Greller was looking at him going, no, what were you thinking? You know, I just, that was, I mean, I was watching it on TV and I was just like, what?
Yeah, I about came out of the couch. My wife's in her office working. I'm out there yelling to TV. I'm going, oh my God, no.
I just think that it was a mental breakdown on both their parts. Maybe a little bit of panic from bogeying 10 and 11, and that was the last thing you wanted to do was bogey a par three, especially a 157-yard par three, but. You know, it is what it is, and golf is like that. It just hands you things that you've got to deal with, and he didn't deal with it very well. That's what I see. But yes, I definitely think that he'll grow from that and he'll mature from that tremendously. Yeah, yeah.
You know, going back to our point on making tweaks and changing Augusta National, that just proves exactly what we're saying. 157 yards, okay. The shortest hole in the golf course completely changes the whole complexion of the whole tournament. You know, yeah. He's got the tournament in control. And it's the shortest hole in the course that changes. It's not a 600-yard par 5 that makes a difference. It's a 157-yard par 3. So let's make more holes like that. You know, number 3, I don't know if you – most people overlook number 3. It's a short par 4. It's only 350 yards. I think it was it Dustin Johnson that drove it and rolled it right up there. Only two or three guys try to drive it. Most guys lay up over to the left and then shoot up the hill so that they can hold it on that green. It's a three-level green. When I first went to Augusta, that's the first hole I wanted to see because I think that's the most unique hole in the golf course. It never gets any pub. But short holes can have a bigger effect because you make a double bogey on a 350-yard par 4, that gets your attention, okay?
Yep.
And a 7 on a par 3, 150 yard, that gets your attention. They don't need to lengthen it out. Just maybe fine-tune some of the stuff they got, right?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Plant some more trees. I mean, it's too bad trees don't grow faster. But right now, I mean, 17 and 18 with their length and with how those trees have grown into the fairway really makes you think about what you're going to hit off the tee. And, you know, 17 and 18, I mean, those are our two finishing holes. No, leave that golf course alone. It's just fine. I don't know what you want to build an executive nine over on your $26 million piece of property you bought or something. I don't know, but leave the golf course alone.
Hey, moving on, Mark. PGA Tour rookie Dowie VanderWaal had a rather uncomplimentary tweet about Tour veteran Mike Weir's withdrawal from the RBC Heritage on Friday at Hilton Head. VanderWaal tweeted, "Gotta love a guy who gets an invite into a tour event and then WD after the first round." So, you know, and then he put it in there, hashtag, hang it up, Mike. Mike Weir was offered a sponsor's exemption into the RBC Heritage last week and was forced to withdraw from the second round after a first-round 78. Weir has had a series of injury-related issues and has either missed the cut or has withdrawn from his last 24 events. So he's like 0 for 2015 and 16. Mm-hmm. He seems sadly to be taking up a spot when he plays tour events these days, you know, that maybe should be going to a more deserving player. So my question to you, Mark, is should Mark Weir just retire or stay home until he's ready to return to the grind of professional golf? Or as a past tour winner and Masters champion, has he earned his starts on the PGA Tour?
Well, he's earned his starts on the PGA Tour, but so has Tiger Woods, okay? I think that if you're not able to compete in a full four rounds of golf, you shouldn't be playing. I mean, and yes, you are taking a spot for maybe a rookie or maybe someone who's got a sponsor's exemption that week. No, I don't think that I don't think you should be in there taking up spots if you're not physically ready to play the game. You don't do it in any other sport. I don't see why you should do it in golf. If a guy's hurt in football or in baseball, he rides the pine. He doesn't play that week. I think that Weir needs to get himself repaired if he can get himself repaired. Those back and hip issues go back 4 and 5 years now, and I'm not sure that that Mike is really going to be able to get back into playing shape and really be able to play competitive tour golf again. But no, I don't think he should be grabbing sponsors' exemptions if he can't finish four rounds of golf. No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I was last year down at the Memorial, was out on the range watching guys hit balls, and Mike was there and working with one of his coaches, and they were spending a lot of time. I probably watched them for about a half an hour. They were really grinding, really working on the positions and where they wanted to be in the golf swing. But I really just feel – I know he's had problems with injuries, and I really just feel, too, that – you know, he was never very long, and through all of this, he's gotten even shorter, and mm-hmm. now the golf courses have just passed him by. Even if he makes a cut, it's really difficult for him to compete. You can't depend on that short game, you know, for everything. You've got to hit some greens, and you got to make some putts. So, you know, it's great. He was wonderful, wonderful player, really nice guy. Great to see him get that Masters jacket, but, you know, I don't know why the guys keep giving him sponsors exemptions. Why does John Daly keep getting him up until the last year or so, you know, just to try and get a few more fans in through the gates. But yeah, I gotta agree with you. I think probably it's time for Mike to wait for the senior tour maybe.
Mhm. Yep, I agree. He's gotta get healthy. He's gotta get better and be able, like I said, to finish four rounds of golf if he's going to go out there and he's going to play, because he's taking up a guy's spot. Think about a guy like a Jim Herman. You know, what if he wouldn't have got a spot in that event and Weir would have taken his place. You know, I don't know. I just see a lot of these young guys coming up, and a lot of the older guys that have been banging around like Herman. You know, they paid their dues. Granted, Mike has won on tour. He won a Masters, but you got to be able to finish four rounds of golf. You just have to. I mean, that's a requirement.
Moving on, even though the driving distance for the Masters was the lowest since 2008 because of the heavy winds and poor driving conditions, the PGA Tour is reporting that the players are on pace to set a new average driving distance in 2016. The PGA Tour average driving distance year-to-date is almost 290 yards. The current 289.4 average marks the highest all-time, 1.6 yards over last year's high mark. Even Jack Nicklaus had a comment for the media and suggestion for the powers that be in golf at the Masters. Just change the freaking golf ball. The ugly word of bifurcation keeps popping its head up every few months. Mark, are you in favor of different equipment for tour pros than for the everyday golfer? Should the tour take steps to limit the golf ball possibly?
Well, I'm not that necessarily in favor of different equipment, but when it comes to the golf ball, I've been screaming this for 8 years, and we could do a whole golf show on this. In fact, the Desert Southwest Golf Show is going to do a whole golf show on this in a few weeks. But, no, I think the ball needs to go. And there's a couple of reasons I think the ball needs to go, not just because of its distance, but it's changing the game of golf. If you watch Jordan Spieth, and like I said, I'm a Spieth fan, so if it sounds like I'm picking on the kid, I'm not. But if you watch Jordan Spieth on Saturday and on Sunday, there were certain shots where he had, and I emphasize that word, had, to work the golf ball, and he couldn't do it. He had shots where he had to hit a draw, he missed the green far right. He had shots where he had to hit a fade, he missed the green far left. And a lot of it has to do with the ball, but a lot of it has to do with the way these kids are being taught and learning the game of golf today. Hit it as far as you can down the middle and have the shortest
just
iron possible as you
baby.
Can. Yep. And it's that's not golf. Golf is Seve Ballesteros. Golf is Jack Nicklaus. Golf is guys, you know, is Gary Player. Golf is where you work the ball. When you have to hit that draw, you hit it. When you have to hit that fade, you hit it. These guys now hit power draws, power fades, all these things. But the workability of the ball, when we left that ballata ball, when we left a lot of balls that were in that time period, those were balls that were very, very workable. And when we left that, we went to the new Pro V1 and the new Pro V1X, and we got much lower spin rates, which gave us, you know, much higher trajectories and much straighter golf shots. The whole idea behind Titleist was not to affect the tour player, but was to help the average hack to hit the ball straight. And so they sold more golf balls at $45 or $55 or $65 a dozen. But in retrospect, I believe it's hurt the tour. It's hurt the tour with distance, but it's hurt the tour with shot making. And to me, shot making in golf is huge. It's very, very, very important. So, yeah, I'm with Nicklaus 100%. And not just with Nicklaus, but with a lot of people in the golf industry today, that there is no sport in the world that lets a player bring his own ball. So golf shouldn't be any different. You've got to play with a ball that is mandated by the USGA and mandated by the PGA Tour and the RNA, and everybody plays the same ball. And yes, I'm all for that 100%.
But if I'm Nike, if I'm Titleist, if I'm Callaway, Srixon, or Bridgestone, and I'm trying to sell these higher, straighter, longer golf balls to the average golfer, I don't want my tour pros playing something different and showing these guys that, you know, that's not really what happens.
I didn't say they were going to do it. I said they should. I mean, I agree with you 100%. When you look at the money that you know, and you name the big guys. When you look at Callaway, when you look at Titleist, when you look at Nike, and all the ball development and everything they're doing and the amount of money that they dump into the PGA Tour, into the LPGA Tour, into the European Tour, and into the Senior Tour, and on and on and on, that's going to be a very, very slippery slope to tell those guys, hey, look, you know, we're not going to let your ball on the tour. You can sell it to whoever you want, but we're not going to let your ball on the tour. We're going to create our own ball. That's going to be a tough pill to swallow because that's a tremendous amount of money that gets poured into not just the PGA Tour, but all the tours.
Yeah, I think that's a big factor. These equipment makers and these ball makers, manufacturers, are not going to want a different ball being played on tour than they're selling to the general public. Nope. Well, Mark, that wraps up the Par 5 news presented by United Golf Network, who wants every golfer to enjoy the game more and have the opportunity to earn money while doing it. They offer a top line of golf products, including popular name brands like Nike, Wilson, Greg Norman, Ashworth, TaylorMade, Adidas, and Where to Win. Everything a golfer needs, clubs, balls, bags, shoes, apparel, and accessories are available at discount coupons for use savings. They also have the great program to earn more discounts and commissions. You're going to set up your own golf shop through them. You know, it's a great program. If you haven't checked it out, visit UnitedGolfNetwork.com. Check out their products, discounts, and their opportunities. And, Carlos, let's take our next break. And when we come back, we'll hear from our very important guest, PGA Tour member Heath Slocum.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. Mark, Heath Slocum turned professional in 1996. Severe colitis issues delayed his making it onto the PGA Tour, but he won three times on the Web.com Tour in 2000 and earned his PGA Tour card. He has four wins out on tour, including the 2009 Barclays, part of the FedEx Cup playoffs. He beat Ernie Els, Padraig Harrington, Steve Stricker, and a guy you might remember, Tiger Woods, by a single shot. For the last year, he's been dealing with some injuries and personal issues, and he's just now ready to resume his PGA Tour career. I got a chance to meet him at Pinehurst a couple weeks ago, and he was kind enough to talk to us. And so, Carlos, would you play the interview, please?
We are here at the Golf Writers Association golf outing at Pinehurst. We happen to be at Mid Pines this evening. We just came off of dinner, and Heath Slocum is here. You'll know the name Heath Slocum. He's played on tour. Currently working to get back on tour, and Heath was here tonight, and so we cornered him and asked him to come on and talk to us a little bit.
Thanks for having me. I mean, a joy to be here. Actually, a privilege just to be able to come here and play some really good golf courses with some actually really good people. I'm excited to be here.
So we played over at Southern Pines today, and somebody said that you shot a nice little 64.
I don't know. I made a lot of birdies. I mean, we were having fun out there, and it's fun when you kind of lose track of birdies, but I definitely made some, and I had a great time. So anytime that someone says you shoot 64, I'll take it. I mean, no worries right there. I got it.
Yeah. Well, I think it was probably low of the day without any question. It was a bunch of hack golf riders. So, Heath, you have been on tour. You're currently not out there on tour. What's your status going forward here?
I'm in the past champions categories. I've won out on tour before. When later in the year I should start getting in some events, I'll just look to capitalize. So I've kept my game sharp. I've gotten my game back sharp after losing kind of my card last year. Actually, right now, just looking forward to any opportunity to play and to get back to doing what I love.
What is your thoughts on the wraparound schedule and, you know, a few more tournaments that are out there? And I know it's difficult for guys that are on the bubble or close to that 125 to get enough starts sometime to earn enough money to get into the top 125.
Well, first, the wraparound schedule. Sometimes, though, when you're having like a year like I had last year, you kind of look forward to a fresh start of a new year, which you really didn't get this year. But at the same point, I think that it's been good for some of the fields and for the golf for a game to bring some bigger names, some new blood to some of these tournaments. And I think that the tournaments themselves and the sponsors have enjoyed it. And looking from the golf fans, I think they've enjoyed it. All we can do is adapt each and every week, and it's a proving ground. So whether it's a new year or a wraparound season, we know the rules before we head into the season, and all we'd look to do is bring our best game to each and every week.
Tim Fincham announced his retirement. He's been fantastic for the game. The things that have gotten started under his administration the last 22 years have been phenomenal. From a player standpoint, we talked a little bit about the pension program and the retirement program. And I know as a player, you've probably looked at that a little bit. And do you have any comments on that and the pension program, that the retirement program that the PGA players are under right now?
From a personal standpoint, I couldn't ask better, like, pension and for the retirement program. You look across sports world, and not only that, just across the business world into what, I mean, we're fortunate enough to do, like, what we love for a living. And to have a program like that that puts money away for not only our future, but for our kids' future, we're very fortunate. That's all I can say about that. I mean, it's like, we are very, very lucky, and Tim Fincham has done a wonderful job of putting that together. And it's hard to put into words, like, how lucky we are. As
you grew up with a couple of biggest characters on tour, right? Bubba Watson and Boo Weekly. So what, you got something in the water down there in Milton, Florida, that turns out golfers and cool characters, or what?
Yeah, I'm definitely the tamest, but it's amazing that we do. We have Boo Weekly. I mean, Bubba Watson, all from the same high school, a town of 8,000 people. We're 5 years apart. Boo and I we graduated together, same age. But Bubba was as talented as like a sixth, seventh, eighth grader that we would have, could have, wished we could have had him on our team, in our high school team then. But it was amazing. And we grew up on the golf course that you look at, and you look at Boo's game where he hits it dead straight every single shot. And you would say, yeah, that fits that golf course. And then you look at Bubba, who works the ball in every single direction in big curves, and said, exactly. I mean, that's the course that we grew up on, that you could do all of that. I was fortunate enough to be pushed and to have those kind of talent around me. I knew that they were incredible golfers, and I tried to work hard, as competitive as I am, to beat them daily. And
so that was, as you were young, that was a good competitive drive for you to test yourself against them. They kind of helped drive you, and you helped drive them to succeed.
Well, absolutely. I think we all knew each other. We were all friends. I mean, Bubba was younger, but he was out there every single day. And, yeah, you didn't want to come in and say, hey, what'd you shoot today? Because we played a lot of nine-hole things back then because you had to go to school. But you didn't want to come in and say, yeah, I shot 35. And then, like, you know, a 10-year-old or, you know, 11-year-old Bubba come in and say, well, I shot 33. So, absolutely. And then, you know, Boo and I played a lot of golf together, and we just, I mean, we're more like brothers than we are friends. So, yeah, we were competitive. I mean,
I got one more question for you. So, give me a rating, 1 to 10, on Boo's beard right now.
Well, I mean, if you're going beards, like, I mean, I would have to go a 9. I mean, only because if he has a little more time, it'll be a 10, but, I mean, Graham DeLay's got a pretty good one going, too. So, between those two, like, I mean, they got definitely the best and the worst on tour.
To your knowledge, I got to ask this. To your knowledge, when Boo came out with the ZZ Top beard, when he came back from injury and started playing this year, did he get a note from PGA Tour about trimming that baby up a little bit?
I'm not going to say yes, but I have a really good feeling there was some kind of, like, suggestion that any chance you could clean that up. I mean, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm just saying, like, I'm pretty sure there might have been some kind of letter that said, hey, Boo, like, any chance you could shave that?
Let's talk just for a second what brought you here to Mid Pines, to Pinehurst this week. You're doing some work with BioMech. What is that, and what's your role in that?
So BioMech is a company, and right now we only have putters that are trying to, I don't want to say simplify, but it's trying to help, you know, everybody in golf, from pros to beginners to amateurs to to building golf. And saying that, like, I've been an ambassador of theirs using their putter right now for almost a year and a half. We have some other equipment coming down the line, some other technology that's going to help, I won't say the average golfer, but I think it's going to help everybody in golf, not only grow the game, but, like, improve. And it's going to help teachers connect with their students. It's going to help students connect information that they possibly never had. And I think that it's something that can help every single player in the game, you know, just get better. And I think that's what the biomech message should be. It's like we're trying to get better at what we do and what we enjoy. I mean, the people that play golf, they'll tell you, like, I'll putt with a Coke can if I think I can make it. But, you know, we just want to get the ball in the hole faster. We want to shoot the best score we can possible. And I think with biomech, we're trying to help everybody in the game. We're trying to help from the PGA professionals to the beginners to go, you know what, there's a better way to do this. There's a simpler way to do this. There's an easier way to swing. There's a healthier way to get through the game of golf and to enjoy it. And I love golf. I love what I do. I wish I could teach it to help more people. And I feel like this is an avenue that I believe and I truly, truly think that it helps me be a better golfer. And I think it can help a whole lot of other people not only be better at golf but enjoy the game.
I got one more really important question here. So I played with the founder of the company, mm-hmm. Frank, today. He connected on a couple drives. He can move it out there a little bit. So can he hit it past you?
I mean, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say no, and I'm going to say no. Only because I'm just going to say he never plays, and he only really connects with, like, maybe one drive around. But I will give him the credit. Like, when he hits that one drive, I'm square in the face. He does. He hits it past me. I mean, and he's older than me, and, like,
out of respect.
Out of respect. I'm a hope he doesn't listen to this, but I'm way more accurate. Way more accurate.
Well, we're happy to be talking to Heath Slocum, PGA Tour player and member, and Heath, thank you so much for taking a few minutes talking to us.
I mean, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. And thanks for everything. I mean, like, growing the game and listening to these people and having these people listen to you and what you do for the game. I appreciate it.
That wraps up our interview with Heath Slocum. Mark, anything stand out for you in that interview?
I just love that kid's attitude. You know, he's so grateful and so thankful for what he has, and he's been through a lot. And, a town of 8,000 people is cranking out some pretty handy talent down there in Florida. I mean, he's very genuine, and I just love his attitude, and I love his humility, you know, him saying that I'm just so blessed and so lucky to be out here doing this. You know, it's a dream come true, and I just, when I hear that from the guys out on the tour, I've just got to smile and say, you know, I really do like that person. Yeah.
He was a real joy to talk to. We had a great time. As you could tell, we were laughing about as much as we were talking. And as I was wrapping that up, his boss and a couple other reps from the company who are also PGA players, they're not on tour, but they're PGA professionals, walked up and were listening to the end of it. And so we were just having a blast with it. And he was really a lot of fun to talk to. I'm really glad I got a chance to meet him. Moving on to the practice range. As you know, on my little trip here this spring, I got to spend some time on Kiwa Island. Mark, if I mention Kiwa Island to you, what is the first thing you think of?
Yeah, I think of golf history, especially in the 90s and here in the 2000s. The Ryder Cup was there in 91, and then they had the World Cup there in 97, and then again in 03, the PGA Championship in 2012. I believe the PGA Seniors was there also. For being a very young course, it already has a lot of tradition and a lot of majors connected to it. It's the ocean course is a tough track. I mean, 7,800 yards built right there on the Atlantic, so you have the prevailing winds that affect play. You can play it on a really nice day, and it's a great round of golf, and you can play it on a windy day, and it's a player's nightmare. I think it's a fantastic facility. I've never been there. I haven't really done a lot of East Coast golf. I was born and raised on the West Coast and spent most of my time on this side of the Rocky Mountains. But from everything that I hear about it and read about it, it should be the sixth island in the Hawaii chain. I mean, it's just that nice. So, but yeah, that's kind of my thoughts about it.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what everybody thinks about. They think about the ocean course. They think about the war on the shore in the Ryder Cup 1991. They think about the 2012 PGA Championship won by Rory. You know, and then being the ocean course being one of the most difficult golf courses in the world. But you know what, Mark? They have four additional golf courses open to the public on the island for the resort. There's a couple private courses too, but just for the Kiwa Island Resort, there's also Oak Point, Osprey Point, Cougar Point, as well as Turtle Point that offer a variety of golf for the discerning golfer. So it's just not the ocean course. While I was there, I got to tape some interviews with Brian Girard, the director of golf for the Kiwa Resort, as well as the head professionals at the other courses that make up the Kiwa Resort complex. And in the first section of the taped audio you're going to hear, you hear from Brian Girard, and he manages all five properties, and he kind of gives us an overview of the courses. The next section features Scott Ammons, who is the head professional at Oak Point. Then Turtle Point's head pro, Mark Schaefer, talks about the renovations they're currently doing at his golf course. Rick Ferguson is the head professional at Osprey Point. He talks about that and also a little bit about the Sanctuary Hotel and various dining options in their side resort. And finally, Steve Younger, who is the head professional of the Ocean Course, talks about the history of that course and a quick preview of the 2021 PGA Championship that will be held there. So, Carlos, if you could run that tape for us, we'd appreciate it.
We are here at Kiwa Island in South Carolina, and we are talking with Brian Girard today, who is the director of golf for the Kiwa Island Resort. He's been here for 30 years, and Brian, a guy from Illinois, you ended up down here in South Carolina. How'd that happen?
Yeah, I went to school at Western Illinois University. Graduated from there in 1986, and I had to do a six-month internship. And one of my instructors knew of the original director of golf here. His name was Tommy Cuthbert back in 1986, and made a phone call for me, so down I came. And I started in the bag room, moving bags, carts, worked to do a little snack bar work, your basic entry-level stuff. Things have fallen into place for me through the years. Spent 5 years as a head professional at Turtle Point, 11 years as a head pro out at the Ocean Course, and in the past 10 as the director of golf. So I've been very fortunate.
When anybody mentions Kiwa Island from where I'm at, the first thing they think of is the war by the shore and the PGA Championship on the Ocean Course. But Kiwa Island, the Kiwa Island Resort, is so much more than just the Ocean Course.
The Ocean Course is the flagship. That's the draw. That's what gets people here. But we've got five really good ones. Starting off with the Ocean Course, the Pete Dye design, we opened that in 91, just it speaks for itself. It's a world-class golf experience out there. Looking forward to the 21 PGA Championship that we've got coming. But, again, we've got four other great ones by Jack Nicklaus. We've got Turtle Point, and we're currently renovating that golf course. We started in January, total renovation, green tees, fairways, bunkers going to Pass Palm, salt-tolerant grass that we've got on three of our other five courses. Open that back up in October. Looking forward to that. We've got Osprey Point that we redid in 2014, our Fazio golf course. Our members and resort guests tends to be their favorite golf course, a little bit wider fairways, bigger greens. You can miss it and still get away with it out there. Just an enjoyable experience. Then we've got Cougar Point, our Gary Player design. Well, that was the original golf course here on the island, opened in 1976 under the name Marsh Point. Then we redid it in 97 and changed the name to Cougar Point. And just a great golf course. And then we have Oak Point just off the island. And we did a renovation out there in 2015. We opened that up fall last year. And it's got rave reviews, worth the trip over, just as good as everything else here on the island. So you can come down and spend the week and get five different looks and just have a great time out here.
I was over at Osprey Point today, and that also is a very wonderful golf course. And if people are concerned about coming here because they've heard, well, Kew Island's difficult, and, you know, it's not like in Florida where there's just water everywhere. You have plenty of room to hit the ball here and have an enjoyable round, and especially if you use the correct tee for your handicap, you're going to have a fun experience.
You hit the nail on the head, Fred. I'll tell you, and that's true with all of our golf courses. I think you're going out to the ocean course, and you get on the right set of tees, Pete gave you plenty of room to play golf out there. I think Pete's the master at drawing your eyes off your line, off the tees, into trouble. But if you can get past that, and our caddies certainly help you with that, then there's plenty of room to play golf. Osprey Point as well. Not a lot of forced carries either. I think you made a good point there about the water hazards. And, you know, we actually built 10 new sets of tees at Osprey, forward tees. And you can combine those with our forward tees or our member tees. There's a lot of different ways to play it. But, you know, we want to keep golf fun and enjoyable. And, you know, people enjoy their experience, and it all starts with getting on the right set of tees. And certainly, you can back up the better players. The lower handicappers can get back on our back set of tees and have all the challenge that they want. But the higher mid-level handicap players get on the right set of tees and enjoy it.
I want to make one more point while we're talking. I've just been so impressed from the Sanctuary Hotel itself to the courses to the bad guys to the rangers, to the pros in the shop. The service here is absolutely outstanding. It's second to none.
Certainly appreciate that comment. It's something we take a lot of pride in, and we standard ourselves on it in true, genuine Southern hospitality. And, you know, going through the training and having everybody on board and buying into it, really believing in it, because you can tell the difference, something contrived and something that's coming from the heart. And we, you know, that's something that we strive, and it's not for everybody, but I thank you for saying that it shows, and we take a lot of pride in that here for our guests that come here and visit us.
We are talking with Scott Ammon, who is the head professional at Oak Point Golf Club, one of the properties here on Kiwa Island Resort. You know, we got a chance to play the golf course here the other day, and I found it very player-friendly, and I know talking to you when they did the renovation last year, that was one of your goals.
Yes, to make it much more player-friendly and to bring the course up to the same level as the other courses on the island.
I think Kiwa bought this property. It was a real estate development, a golf course inside a real estate, and they bought the property and have turned it into the fifth course here at the resort. It's outside the island itself. But still, players are going to want to come here just because it's so much fun to play.
Yeah, that's correct. We're just 10 minutes off the island, and it has a gorgeous view. It sits on the Holover Creek in the Kiwa River.
In the renovation last year, you said you wanted to make it more player-friendly, and I noticed the conditions are fantastic. You said you did some regrassing of the tees, fairways, and greens, and the ball sat up well. It ran out well. But the greens would just seem to be perfect to me.
Yes, we changed out the grass to Paspal and Platinum, and it's a great playing surface. The greens are fabulous, and there's not much grain. They're a little bit firm right now, but they'll soften up over time.
One of the things I noticed, too, going down number 10, off to my left, I was playing by myself, but I was joined by two alligators. And as I was up on the green, there was a few more sunning on the other bank over there. So you've got some wildlife here.
Yeah, it's like Animal Kingdom out here. I've taken my niece out a few times, and we've counted 60 alligators at a time.
But they seem to be pretty benign. They don't really bother you as long as you stay away from them.
The only time that I have issues with them is when I'm trying to mark the golf course for a tournament. I just go up, and when they won't get out of the way, I'll come back and paint the rest of the course after they're gone.
Yeah, giving them their due, that's probably a wise decision. Before we let you go today, is there anything that you'd like listeners to know about coming here to your facility?
I just think if you haven't been here before that you really need to come out and play the golf course. After the renovation, it is in great shape. It's, again, much more player-friendly. The members actually love it out here. My member rounds are up about 100 rounds.
Yeah, I might mention also, too, the driving range, a great facility, a good practice area. But when you're coming down to Kiwa Island, make sure you stop over here to Oak Point. We are here at Turtle Point Golf Club in the Kiwa Island Resort. We're talking to the head professional, Mark Schaefer. Turtle Point is undergoing a renovation currently. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Our ownership had decided he wanted to redo the golf course, so Jack came in October or November, put the plans, the board approved everything, and we shut down October 1. All the green complexes are being redone, whether the greens are moving, bunkering, everything, a lot of bunkers in the fairway, some being taken out. Some of the fairways, the fairway complexes are going from 20 acres to about 30 property lines, new irrigation.
The course actually opened in 1981. It is a Jack Nicklaus design. And this is the second renovation that's undergone since you opened.
We redid it in 2000, redid the green complex here in 2000 for the renovation, and now I'm here again.
With your five courses here, there's really so much more and a lot of great golf for the average golfer.
All five golf courses are different, so you can drive in there with a lot of marsh, C-type style. Then Cougar's a really fun golf course going through all the getting in Turtle Point. Different clubs in your bag, you got to be straight off the tees you play.
You had mentioned the ocean course, of course, sits out on the point and is exposed to the ocean pretty much all on three sides. Here at Turtle Point, you have three holes that play right along the ocean also.
Sure. 14, 15, and 16 is a par 3. The beach is all on the right view or the green, running down. Par 4 comes down the entire left side. If you hook it, you're on over the ocean.
So this course has been renovated a couple times. Oak Point's been renovated last year. The course is kind of undergo a systematic renovation, updating, and improvement. That says a lot for the ownership and keeping everything modern and current and in really top-notch shape for any golfer that wants to come down here. We are here at Osprey Point in the Kiwa Island Resort. We're talking with head pro Rick Ferguson. We got a chance to play the golf course yesterday. Found it very player-friendly and in fantastic shape. Stan, you did some renovation work here, and that's why you've regrassed it, did some a lot of work a couple years ago.
We did. We went in and had the opportunity to make the golf course back to its original conditioning. Enjoyed the opportunity to get new playing surfaces on our golf course, and we went with Paspal and Platinum. And it's a grass that it really tolerates the poor water quality that we use, allows for a much better playing surface. And so we took the opportunity to get the greens back to their original sizes, renovate all the bunkers, and essentially regrass the golf course, and it's in wonderful shape.
And that's another one of the things we've noticed here at Kiwa Island. The ownership is not shy about spending money and keeping the place in top-notch shape and wonderful condition for any type of player.
It is. Our owner is very passionate about having the golf course as good as they can be, as well as the rest of the assets on the island. So
right
we have a golf course that is very playable and unique from each design.
They can't hear a stock.
Players think about Kiwa. They think about the ocean course, the Ryder Cup, the PGA Championship. They see how difficult, it's one of the most difficult courses in the world. But the other four courses are a lot of fun to play.
They are. We've been blessed to have some of the best designers in the business, and I think we've got five distinctly different golf courses, and that's a great thing for our players to come out. They're not going to see the golf courses over and over again. They're going to find five different golf courses, and our owner has made it a commitment that he's going to have the golf courses as good as they can be, and you can see that with the renovation at Osprey 2 years ago, and last year we did Oak Point. This year we're doing Turtle Point, and hope to get Cougar Point done before the next PGA Championship in 2021.
So the golf is fantastic here. We've established that. But also, the Sanctuary offers a wonderful place to stay, five-star resort, a great hotel. But then there's some pretty good dining here. Just matter of fact, your place here, we had dinner the other night, the Cherrywood Barbecue Grill. It's fantastic.
Like our golf courses, we've got distinctly different dining options. And the one here at Osprey Point is Cherrywood Barbecue and Ale House. All the meats are smoked on site and a wonderful beer selection, and it's a great place.
Man does not live by golf alone, but you can have a wealth of it here at Kiwa Island. And then afterwards, there's great dining and wonderful places, as well as a nice beach to hang out on. So we're happy to be talking to Stephen Younger, who is the head professional here at the Ocean Course at Kiwa Resort. Has been here for several years. Stephen, welcome to the show. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be on with you today.
So you've been here for several years. You were here when the PGA Championship was here in 2012, and the weather was certainly a concern then. Wind, you got to see everything that week that the course has to offer.
Sure. You know, I think that's one of the great things about the 2012 PGA, and one of the things we were hoping for going into it was that, you know, the people that are that were viewing the championship on TV and the people that were here as spectators, and certainly the players too, got a chance to experience all the facets of the Ocean Course that make it a special venue. And the most compelling thing about the Ocean Course, besides the design characteristics and everything Pete Dye put into design and the nature and the views, is really the weather. And it really is a completely different golf course from day to day, depending on the changing weather. You know, we're right here stuck out on the eastern end of Kiawah Island, so we're buffeted by the winds on a daily basis. We get all kinds of different weather coming through here. So for the PGA, we had a great scoring day on Thursday. We had very, very windy, tough conditions on Friday, and we saw the highest scoring average in PGA Championship for one round on that Friday, and the golf course really bared its teeth that day. Then Saturday, you know, unfortunately, had a little bit of rain come in, but that's what happens in the summertime in the southeast. And Sunday, we had a great day for golf and a compelling championship with Rory McIlroy breaking the championship record by winning by 9 strokes there on Sunday.
And it was so compelling and was so good that the PGA has decided to come back for 2021.
That's right. You know, we have a long history of championships with the PGA of America here at the Ocean Course. You know, we started with the 1991 Ryder Cup, and we hosted that, and that was awarded to the Ocean Course before the golf course was even built. But they had so much confidence in Pete Dye's ability and the piece of land that we're on here that they went ahead and awarded the Ryder Cup to the Ocean Course prior to it being constructed, and it kept, you know, turned out to be one of the most compelling and historical Ryder Cups in the history of that event. So we have a long history with the PGA. We're looking to build on that in 2021 when the PGA Championship comes back, and everyone certainly in Charleston is excited about that. You know, it's a big deal for us here in the Lowcountry to host these major sporting events, and to have the opportunity to relive what we had in 2012 again is really exciting, and everyone's certainly looking forward to that.
Charleston is a top tourist attraction year in and year out, but it's not a big sports city as far as for professional sports or even collegiate sports. So having a PGA championship is a big deal economically for the area.
It certainly is. You know, and the good thing about the combination of a major championship like the PGA and Charleston is that we do, like you said, have that history of tourism. You know, we're certainly in the hospitality business here in Charleston. Charleston's one of the highest-rated destination cities in the world. You know, people come from Europe and all over the world to visit Charleston. So we have a lot of experience with that, but there, like you said, there's not a lot of major sporting events here. You know, our biggest team is Charleston River Dogs, which is a single-A baseball team. So when we have these big championships come, you know, it's a great combination because we already have that experience with hospitality, and to be able to provide that service we do for everyone that visits Charleston on a day-to-day in combination with having a great major sporting event is something that really just that works very well together.
With the PGA coming back in 2021, I know a lot of the other properties are doing some renovation. They're doing some planned renovations at different courses on the property. Is there anything planned or in the works to alter anything or change anything here on the Ocean Course before the PGA in 2021?
You know, it's pretty unlikely that we do anything. I'm sure we'll do some tweaks like we always do. One of the things Pete Dye is famous of saying about the Ocean Course is the golf course walks. You know, what he means by that is because of those winds we have and the sand that kind of blows around, and the golf course is always changing and nature is always changing the golf course. So from time to time we'll come in and we'll smooth out some of the edges that get popped up and do some different recontouring of some sand faces and some things like that. But other than just sort of the normal upkeep that you have on the golf course and those sorts of things, we don't anticipate doing any major changes. You know, the golf course was so well received by the players in the 2012 PGA Championship, and the conditions and the playing conditions that were presented for the players were some of the best that they had seen. We're confident the golf course is certainly ready to host a major championship. You know, we could really host a major championship at any point without making any changes to the golf course. So we're happy with that.
Well, thank you so much for taking a few minutes, Stephen. We've really appreciated our time here on Kiawah Island and look forward to getting back here again.
That wraps up our interviews from Kiawah Island. And
Mark, like I said, I had a chance to visit there. I got to play three of the golf courses as well as the ocean course. And I have to say the service there was just off the charts. It's unbelievable. As soon as you walk on the property, they know your name and everyone addresses you when you meet them. It's just a first-class operation all the way. Would urge anybody when they get the chance to take it or make an opportunity to get over there and check it out. So, Mark, anything that you heard from that caught your ear?
No. I think that what you're saying there is so important to a playing experience, especially when you're at a resort, to have that outstanding service, that food and beverage option that's outstanding, and being able to be almost all in at the resort where you really don't have to leave if you're there for 5, 6, 7 days and just be able to really and truly enjoy the facility. I think that just makes the experience that much better.
Well, I can tell you this. My wife did not want to leave. She went into a depression when we had to pack up and go because she really enjoyed it. And we haven't even talked about the beach. The beach there was outstanding. She spent a lot of time down there. It's kind of hard-packed sand, so they do a lot of riding of bikes, and it's great for walking on, and it was really one of the nicest places that we've ever been, and we can't wait to go back there again. Hey, Mark, let's go right into our final putts here. Rory has committed to play in the Wells Fargo ahead of the Players Championship, but number one Jason Day and number two Jordan Spieth are taking some time off before the fifth major and before the summer rush of other major championships like the WGCs, the FedEx Cup playoffs, and the Olympics. Well, since Phil Mickelson had some time off last weekend by missing the cut, he decided to play in the Valero Texas Open this week. Joining Phil in San Antonio are Jimmy Walker, Zach Johnson, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, and Billy Horschel. Is there someone that you like there in San Antonio this week, Mark?
You know, I've got to defer back to Jason Duffner a few weeks ago when Jim Herman won, and that is, he was saying that people really don't understand how good every single one of those guys out there are. And on any given weekend, anybody can win. You can never discount the horses. I mean, you can't. But it's amazing the talent and how deep the talent is right now in the PGA Tour, and who might just come out of nowhere and surprise you. You know, that who's that guy kind of thing. I never heard of this guy. Who is he? Everybody's running to their computers and trying to find out, trying to get all the history they can on people that are playing in a lot of these events. And I just think that, like I said, you can't discount the horses, but you never can discount the entire field. I think the field is always playing.
Yeah, you make a really good point, and I think TPC San Antonio is one of the most difficult golf courses on the tour each year. So it's going to take somebody that's pretty much right on their game, driving it well, and getting it in the hole. So it should be interesting to watch anyhow. If you like to gamble on golf, in spite of Spieth's untidy loss at the Masters, he's the odds-on favorite for the gamblers to win the U.S. Open at Baltusrol in June. Oakmont. Sorry, I said that wrong. A Chinese firm who bought up 22 golf properties in Myrtle Beach is undergoing investigation for fraud in China. Hopefully their financial problems won't affect the courses here in the U.S. At Myrtle Beach, which is one of the leading golf destinations in the country. And new Georgia Tech basketball coach Josh Pastner said he would not hire an assistant who lists golf as one of their leisure activities on a resume. He feels it takes too much time away from the job, and he demands 110% effort from his staff all the time. Mark, could you work for a guy who doesn't allow golf as a pastime activity?
Well, no, I wouldn't. That wouldn't make any sense, especially with my chosen profession, but absolutely not. In fact, I think golf enhances one's ability in the workplace, and I think that to take any kind of recreation and leisure off the table, where a person might be able to get out and relax and come back in with a fresh set of ideas on that Monday morning, and even able to give maybe 120 or 150% because of being able to recharge the batteries. So, you know, I think that's kind of a foolish statement.
Well, I agree 100%. You know, I know when I was younger, and I had a lot of commitments with children, you know, growing up, and we needed to do things with them and a lot of family obligations and all that kind of thing, and really cut into the golf time. And if I couldn't get out and at least chip and putt or hit some few balls or something every once in a while, I mean, it just – it made the weeks unbearable, it seemed like. So I just think that's kind of stupid, you know. If it works for him, I guess more power to him, but – I think in the long run, you just burn people out and you don't get their best from them. So, hey, Golf Week is reporting that the number two ranked 17-year-old women's amateur, Hannah O'Sullivan, has decided to pass on a golf scholarship to USC and instead plans to pursue an LPGA card at Q School later. Of course, maybe I would pass a USC, too. It's such a crummy school. Her father said, "We do not have a timetable and do not feel rushed to turn professional." She just won the low amateur honors at the ANA Inspiration 2 weeks ago. She captured the 2015 U.S. Women's Amateur and became the youngest player to win on the Sumatra Tour at the age of 16 in the Gateway Classic near her home in Chandler, Arizona, right out there by you, Mark. Last summer, she tied for 33rd at the LPGA's JTBC Founders Cup in Phoenix, thanks in part to a second-round 64. Boy, that number seems to be popping up a lot tonight. We should go play that in the lottery. In June, O'Sullivan will lead Team USA at the Curtis Cup in Ireland. Her U.S. Women's Amateur victory also ensures three more starts in major championship, a perk that she would lose if she turned professional. O'Sullivan, who first qualified for the U.S. Women's Open in 2012 at the age of 14, turns 18 on May 11th. Mark, my question is this. If your daughter were a top-ranked amateur, would you want her to attend at least some college or just turn professional?
Well, I've seen her play, and there's no doubt that she is a tremendous talent. She could be another Lydia. She's a great player. She's got everything you need in a golf game. She's long. She has tremendous talent around the green. She's a good putter. She has a tremendous amount of maturity for her age. But back to your question, I would at least want her doing some college in the off season. I would want her to get a degree, yes. There are no guarantees in life. And you don't know what's going to happen with golf. We look at Tiger Woods. We were just talking about Mike Weir here not too long ago and injuries. You don't know what's going to happen. And to be able to have that education and be able to fall back on it, I think is just the ultimate insurance policy. And I think it would be very, very foolish for her to not consider some type of college education and moving forward and getting a degree, and even if it's sports media, any kind of sports communication, maybe something to do with sports physical therapy, whatever it might be. I mean, if golf is her calling and her passion, and athletics are her calling and her passion, she could certainly pursue a degree that wraps around that. But, no, I think to say that I'm going to completely pass on college, I think that's a huge mistake, a huge, huge mistake.
I agree with you. I know you and I think a lot alike on a lot of subjects. And If I had a daughter that was talented in high school and played on the national scene and won and performed well in professional tournaments, I would still want her to go to a minimum of 1 year and probably at least 2 years of college just for her social maturation. You know, when you go directly from high school to a professional golf career, you're jumping right into the workforce. People, kids don't realize this is now a job. This is going to be your job from 7 in the morning until dark. And, you know, you've got to do things you don't want to do. You know, you can't just lay around and play video games. And, you know, you got to talk to these people. You got to be nice. You got to dress up. You got to go. You got to travel here. You got to travel. It gets to be a grind. It gets to be an old deal. And it looks glamorous. It looks wonderful. You know, the big checks, the bright lights, the advertising on television and, you know, pictures in the magazines and all that stuff. But, you know, it's a lot of work. And for a young person at the age of 17, 18, 19 to be thrust into that without having a little bit of an adjustment time to kind of figure out who they are a little bit and mix with other kids away from your family a little bit, I think it's just a big ask. I know kids do it. It's worked well for Lydia Ko, and we've talked to her several times, and she is just – I mean, she's like talking to a 35-year-old. She's an unusual situation. You know, Brooke Henderson seems to be another one that can handle it real well. Jessica Korda's little sister is now turning pro, forsaking college. You know, we're seeing it more and more, it seems, in the women's game. The money is bigger. You know, there's more incentive to do it. But, boy, Mark, I want to see kids go to college for a year or two.
Yeah, and, you know, if she signs on with a major sponsor, you know, those guys are just going to chew up her time. I mean, what little time she has away from practice, away from applying herself to her game is going to be taken up by sponsor appearances and that type of thing. I mean, it really isn't a life. When you talk to tour players, and especially tour players that are in the top 10%, I mean, they have very, very, very little time for anything other than golf. And I don't know how many Lydia Ko's there are. We saw Michelle Wee just get eaten alive by the press, by sponsorship, by, you know, so many different things that really changed her life. And she went to Stanford, you know. So I think that the education is very, very important. Being able to have social time, as you mentioned, absolutely important for well-roundedness and really being able to mature and grow into a young individual. And I think she's missing the boat by not saying that, yeah, I do want to go to school and I do want to get a degree in something that I enjoy, and I think it would be a huge help to her on the tour later. I don't see the big hurry going out when you're 17 versus going out when you're 21. That 4 years to me, particularly at that age, really doesn't make any difference at all. And if it does make a difference, I think it's more positive than it is negative, because you have a chance to mature more and just get acclimated to society and life a little bit better. So that's kind of my feeling on that.
I agree 100% with you again. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Back Nine Report for April the 19th, 2016. We want to thank our guest host, Mark Croft, for sitting in for Carlos this evening. You can catch Mark every Tuesday morning on the Desert Southwest Golf Show on KBLU Radio in Yuma, Arizona. He does a great job with local information, and they talk about the national golf scene, and it's always a good listen. He's also very involved with Mommy Golf and Golf is for Everyone initiatives on Facebook, so jump on and follow those. Follow what Mark's doing with that and some of the other guys that he works with there. Mark, thanks again for joining us tonight.
Oh, Fred, my pleasure. I mean, really, thank you very, very much, and I've enjoyed it immensely. I look forward to getting back with you someday soon. And having you on our show again.
Be happy
maybe
to
we'll
do it
do
anytime,
US,
sir.
Maybe we'll do a U.S. Open thing.
That sounds perfect. Thanks for listening, Golfaholics. We'll look for you on the back nine. Take us out, Carlos.